Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. Well, so we've got a little bit more marketing to go through, but here's an interesting thing I wanted to share with you. Yeah, one of the things I've realized is I know that the divine hand of providence inspires a lot of people. And I believe that there are a lot of people out there that have some really good ideas. The problem is getting everybody to the table and figuring out how to dovetail and how to fit these ideas together. Nine times out of ten, there are people that you will run into that aren't capable. And this happens in business as well. They're just not capable of figuring out how to do that. In other words, they only know what they're doing. And as they understand other players and other parts, they just are incapable. They're not that they're incapable. Maybe they're unwilling. I mean, it could be a number of different reasons why. But bottom line, they are stuck in doing business as usual. Now, if you know anything about businesses, Cisco, it's a perfect example. Cisco, when it originally founded, the founders or the people that created Cisco didn't realize what they needed to do to integrate into a bigger company and to be able to fill a greater role in the IT world. And so a lot of times it takes either venture capital or somebody to come along and say, you know, I kind of like what you're doing, but it's just like with McDonald's. McDonald's is another story, another business story where somebody created processes and they created a very good product. I mean, it may be marginal today as innovation has provided, improvements and so forth. I don't eat at McDonald's, but the point is it became a national, international phenomena as far as, I mean, even in economics, they have what they call the Big Mac economics, because based on the value of a Big Mac across these different economies, kind of helps differentiate the strength and or the state of that particular economy. Anyway, one of the things that I've been doing, and because I'm very open to listening to other people, their ideas, their suggestions, and so forth. And so I don't want to say I've been inundated, but there seems to be an unending source of inspiration out there. How about you? Have you been inspired? Because almost everybody's coming up with these ideas. As we start coming up and as we start realizing, we've got to do, and I think the driving force is that when we start realizing that we're being forced into this position, into the corner, that it almost seems like the end is nigh, then I believe that that's when people really start putting some energy, exerting some energy to their, to trying to find a solution so that something that they can make sense of. Some of the times when we receive this, I mean, we receive this inspiration or what have you, it may be one of those things just to get you involved. One of the things that I think is critical, if you've got a solution, you have to be willing to unify and you have to be willing to put aside your self-interests and your differences and start working together and saying, okay, this is what I've got to do. And so I've talked to a lot of people and most of the people that I've talked to, well, they're set. They're absolutely set on, doing things that make sense to them. I get that. But they also have to understand, they also have to get that we have to unify. The adage, united we stand, divided we fall, is not just a cliche. It is resonating today because when you look at the left, even though it has a lot of myopic issues from abortion, killing kids and, eugenics and that concept, because it's a very dark and evil world on the left side. You also have the group of the greenies where they want to, subjugate you so that we save the planet. There are others that, want to mandate, these vaccinations and healthcare and force you into compliance. And there's some that want to, take away your guns. And when you look at some of the driving forces behind this, they didn't necessarily start with, this myopic, or I should say a collective view. But the left understands that when they're united, they will win. And so the people, the Brady Bill and those people that want to take away your guns, I don't think that they were ever aligned with the greenies or anything else, but they realize that in a united front, they're going to be able to impose their compulsion of taking away your guns. It's the same thing with, vaccinations. It's, and these people, the end, like I say this all the time, the ends justify the means. I mean, they are so headstrong that they want to inflict these things upon you so harshly that what we're really looking at is a level of despotism that when they unleash it, if they succeed in doing what they're going to do, then the despotism and tyranny that they will unleash upon our society. The Bible uses these different and very specific terms. And when they talk about, the last days, they talk about the dreadful day of the Lord. And it basically counters the other concept, of the coming of the Lord and the creation of man and these other epochs, like the deliverance of Israel. The Bible foretold this entire plan from the very beginning. As a matter of fact, that you'll actually find accounts in the New Testament that, the plan had been divulged and has been available, and the prophets have talked about this through the ages. And so, and when I say the prophets, I'm talking going all the way back to Adam and throughout the biblical prophets. They've all known, the forecoming of the Lord, the great and dreadful day of the Lord, with the second coming. And so when we start looking at, is this tyranny and despotism really going to be that bad? In the biblical terms, it's the great and dreadful day of the Lord. There's no worse tribulation that mankind will ever have to suffer than that. So let's just be clear that, it's not going to be something that, it's easy, because, and I've said this to other people, once you go down this path of embracing Christianity, Christ as your Savior, never at any point in time are you in a position that you can't walk away. Do you understand what I just said? You are never compelled to follow and obey his commandments and be compassionate and do all the things that he wants you to do. You're not ever compelled to do that. You are free at any point in time to leave, walk away, and do whatever sin, bad thing you want to do. Now, when you are pulled into the Borg of Satan, into this grateful, dreadful Antichrist, the biblical paradigm here, right? When you go there, there's no coming back. It's almost like accepting Islam. The only way out of being Islamic is death. And that is the law. That is the law that they that Muhammad instituted, supposedly by Allah. And so, just to be clear, that you know, if you want to look at contrasts, there is a significant contrast between these different ideologies. This is why we went through, and we'll go through, the scale of liberty again. When one is embracing liberty, one that does that wants an individual to learn for themselves and make the choices for themselves. And whatever choices you make, they want you to, you know, to be accountable for the consequences of that. You know, it's a society today that we live in that has become more and more involved in trying to remove the consequences of sin, to where, you know, they use abortion as a consequence, you know, removing the consequence of sin. And, you know, same thing with healthcare, same thing with all of these different things that, you know, the Bible has called a sin for so long. Anyway, back to this whole paradigm and concept, I honestly believe that there's a reason why people are getting inspired. And I believe that that inspiration is being driven by that innate spirit that we all kind of possess. It kind of pokes us and goes, you know, you got to do the right thing here. And some of us listen to that. Some of us, you know, listen to it all the time. Some are better than others, but I'm definitely not the perfect man here. And so what we're really talking about here is we're talking about getting involved, but being able to put aside your differences and being able to put aside your self-interest and unifying like the left is doing. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
When you consider riches, wealth, most people put that into monetary terms. As I look over my shoulder from, you know, this long journey I've been on, I believe I can say I'm one of the richest men in the world because I have met such great patriots and friends, many of which, and we share the same sentiments, that many of us would willingly put our lives down on the line. And in context. That's not just a you know, pretty or feel good moment type of thing. What I am talking about is very similar to how they ended the Declaration of Independence, where they pledged their lives and their honor to this cause. And I believe anybody that's bit by this liberty, the defense of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, recognize that it does require the ultimate sacrifice. Now, Abraham, in a way, was asked for the ultimate sacrifice, right? I mean, God told him to go sacrifice his only son. And so, you know, Abraham goes, I don't know how you're going to bless my seed, but here goes, because I don't question you. And I believe that the Lord requires the ultimate sacrifice, but 9 times out of 10, he doesn't actually deliver upon that. Very few times is the ultimate sacrifice required, but it is asked. And if we are willing to do that, then I believe the Lord blesses us. And that's what I've seen. And so I think today people need real good news, not just kind of good news. And so, as you know, this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic-based evidence as well as the academic-based solutions that will get this general government back into the framework. Now, a lot of people, and as a matter of fact, I talk to people in detail regarding what is it really going to take. And really, nobody argues with me. With all of the allies we've been developing and building over the years, there's not one that says your solution is not the ultimate solution. They all have ideas that kind of help bring about, but most all of them recognize that until the states assert the final authority and dismantle all of this unconstitutional government, even if Trump, everybody agrees, even if Trump disbanded all of these things and said, you know, I'm going to do exactly what GR says, we're going to get rid of all this stuff, even if he did it, the next president, Biden or whom, because we'll wait for the real outcome to come, then the next president could undo what he did and rebuild until the states assert their authority and definitively say, you have no power enumerated to you in this Constitution to do these things, period. That's it. Now, I want to thank you for listening, and I want to actually continue to beg, plead, beseech, admonish, whatever would be a good word, adjective, to help motivate you to getting other people involved in listening to the content and the message. As a matter of fact, anybody that follows me realizes that I really don't self-aggrandize myself in trying to say, come tune in, listen to me, I'm going to be on air. It really doesn't matter. What matters is that people find this and share this, because you're the better marketer than I am regarding this content and show. And so this is how you have a critical role in growing and moving the solution into a true movement. Anyway, let me not waste a minute by not reminding you of your birthright as a citizen, that you have a responsibility to protect and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. Now, what's really interesting, in a conversation I actually just had, one person was making comment regarding retribution and compensation and paying for. But that person that I was talking to, I don't think really understands bills of attainder and, more importantly, ex post facto bills or laws, because this individual was basically saying that, you know, all of these atrocities occurred and there needs to be some compensation. And really, the reality is, and the unfortunate reality is that, you know, we move forward in a paradigm where the law allowed something. You can't create a law. This is an ex post facto law. You can't create a law that says that was illegal and, you know, what we have to do is we have to compensate. When people break the law, they have to be held accountable, period. There's no, maybe in the admiralty type of court system. There is this, you know, paid of justification, or I should say, you know, reward, compensation, what have you. But there's no place within our form of government to allow and even consider start allowing ex post facto laws. So let me get into something that I mentioned yesterday. I talked about doing a Liberty Summit with state legislators. And so what I want to do and what I actually propose is the kind of like a curriculum or a series of topics that I would, you know, I think it's best to just kind of let the group choose, because you only have so much time. I could probably go a few days. Anybody that's listened to me can just hear me go down a tangent for hours. Forgive me. The fact of the matter is that there's a lot of information, and a lot of this information really needs to be clear and succinct. And so what I've done is I've kind of created a directory and or a table of content regarding the topics that I believe is very important that is covered by this Liberty Summit. The first thing we got to cover is we have to cover the Constitution and define the Constitution. And then we have to talk about, you know, the state's role in that Constitution. And then we need to then, you know, go into the topic of the power of the states collectively working together. And this concept, this Madisonian and Jeffersonian, technically it's Jeffersonian, but I mean, Madison was on board with it. Madison being one of the many who read Jefferson's book, Notes on the State of Virginia, was very familiar with the concept of holding government accountable and the mechanisms of holding that through the sovereigns. Now, when Jefferson wrote that book, Notes on the State of Virginia, he didn't realize that there was this concept of sovereignty that eluded him. And so one of those concepts of sovereignty is the concept of government sovereignty. Now, I talk about this a lot, and that's just due to the fact that most people can't fathom that governments are sovereigns. But that is the Roger Sherman assertion in the creation of our representative government. American republicanism recognizes that the state sovereignty is a delegated power from we the people, the sovereigns. And this is why the states had representation in the Senate, in Congress. And this is why every state was realigned for a bicameral legislative body to recognize the needs and the matters of concern for the counties. So the counties were represented in the state Senate, and then the people of each county was represented in the House of Representatives. They basically broke the states down, just like they broke the United States down. Well, anybody that's just had this epiphany, well, we're not following that now. Of course not. Because nobody understood, and to this day, I ask a state legislator, why do you guys have a bicameral legislative body? Oh, well, it's to represent the people. No, it's not. It's not. The House of Representatives, or the representative body of the people in the state legislature, those are those representing the ultimate sovereigns. But the Senate is not and was never designed to represent the people. I mean, why have two representatives representing the same people? Or even three? You only need one. That's why Congress was built. And so today, the state legislatures have self-aggrandized themselves into this, okay, you have one. What if you really want to have a representative, then you have to have a single representative. You can't have two. And so, I mean, it may be greedy, and it seems to employ a lot more representatives, but there may be counties that need more than one representative, but you have to create legislative districts, and those legislative districts should be represented by one person. But most states have two representatives per legislative district. And I go, what the heck? They have perverted the layout of American republicanism. So sovereignty and republicanism is another critical topic that needs to be covered in this summit. So that way, when we lead into the powers of states collectively working together against tyranny, we can start understanding how the states actually are sovereigns over the Constitution. Then, obviously, this whole umbrella, the powers of the states, that includes Republic Review, how it works, and getting into the nuts and bolts of it, the audit, the analysis, and the enforcement. Then the next thing I submit is really important that we kind of cover. Well, shoot, I can't believe the time is gone already. I mean, I just started covering this stuff. When we come back, I will cover these topics that we need to broach, with the state legislators. I'll finish going through that, and then we'll get into some need-to-know news, just so everybody can get their Jones fixed on what the heck is going on that they don't know anything about. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so the next order of business is the 14th Amendment. What I'm talking about, for those of you who have forgotten what I was just talking about 2 minutes ago, we're going through the topics that needs to be a part of the summit with state legislators so that state legislators know things. Because, unfortunately, constitutional illiteracy and the lack of understanding the Constitution has been a true detriment to our society. So what we have to do is we have to kind of get these state legislators the education really quick that they never learned. So the 14th Amendment, we need to explain to them that Section 1, and the teeth that's in Section 1, Section 2, Section 3, and even Section 4, and the role that the 14th Amendment plays in today, and how, one, they need to be holding others accountable and not to worry about themselves, because what they need to do is they need to champion this resource office that we'll get to in just a minute here. The other thing, so the next topic is the Electoral College and understanding what their constitutional responsibility is in ensuring that the electors, the manner of choosing electors, is defined by them and not the party. They need to walk away from party control of the electors and allow the people to choose. And I'm okay with the electors being, if you want a Republican Party and a Constitutional Party and what have you, whoever takes the vote in the congressional district that, you know, is a Republican, then that Republican chair of those counties or the chosen chair or what have you, we need to start choosing electors and not president. Anyway, moving forward, we want to get into the nuts and bolts of the Electoral College and how to get back into compliance. We also need to emphasize the importance of reestablishing the militia and moving all of the resources that are within the National Guard into the militia. We also need to clearly delineate emergency powers and what emergency powers are for and what they are not for and what they can do and what they can't do. Also want to kind of float these concepts of if people want to start protecting themselves and their state from money outside the state pouring in, they need to actually establish campaign finance reform to clearly delineate the limitations on who can invest money in their state on a given campaign. And this goes in line with even federal elections as well as state elections. We also believe that it's important that we get into the taxing of social media, the tech companies, and those have been leeching off of the United States and the good people of the United States with whatever corporations and so forth, Google, YouTube, all of these companies, I've covered this before, they all need to be taxed. They all need to be paying their fair share of revenue that they're making in each of these states. Ratifying the First Amendment is also going to be a topic of issue because it'll actually become, the 28th Amendment. But ratifying the First Amendment is critical because this is the displacement of the swamp. This becomes the permanent displacement of the swamp. And it's really important that we start letting state legislators know that there are these things out there that exist, such as this First Amendment. What would it do? It would guarantee that one representative in Congress cannot represent more than 50,000 people. So what that does is it takes this 435 oligarchy and explodes it into a 6,000 plus, I think like 60, it's just under 7,000, I think, something like that, representatives. And what this does is it gets them out of D.C. It makes most all of them reachable to you, their constituents. And so, hey, you know, wouldn't that be a good thing? Keeping them out of D.C., it would actually deflate the D.C. housing market as well, possibly. Anyway, ratifying the First Amendment to the Bill of Rights is a very important topic. Rescinding the 17th Amendment is another equally important topic that we want to dive into so that the state legislators can realize that, oh, we have this power to do this? Then, you know, boom, reject it and start going down the path of appointing their representatives again. It may piss the people off, but the people shouldn't ever be delegating, or I should say they should never have been selecting the representation for the Senate. That is the suffrage of the states, not for the people. So the next topic that I think is really important is that the state legislatures understand what these limitations of ex post facto and bills of attainder laws are. Because the federal government and many state governments are actually passing laws that are violating the Constitution, whether it's a state law, because states are constrained by the exact same thing as the federal governments. No government in the United States can pass bills of attainder or any ex post facto laws, period. And they're doing it. And so they need to understand and recognize what the heck they're doing so that they stop doing this type of thing. A great example of an ex post facto law is reparations. Paying reparations is the same thing as punishing somebody for doing something that was bad. I mean, it's one thing when a person, you know, has committed a crime and they've actually caused financial harm. having that person pay, but it's another thing for the government to just come along and say, hey, boom, we're going to take from the public purse and give you money because these people did bad things. No, 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 no. That's an ex post facto law. And there's a reason why ex post facto laws were banished, because they are the path of tyranny. The next thing we want to get into is common law grand juries and how they function and why they want to start supporting the county common law grand jury mechanism and actually encouraging and possibly even funding counties for using common law grand juries. The Tory Acts is another topic that we need to discuss regarding the expulsion and removal of people that are so rebellious to the Constitution that they have no rights being here, and therefore, you know, working this with the 14th Amendment, either revoking and removing citizenship and converting people to either inhabitants, or if they pose the great enough threat, then they need to be deported. And they can go to any communist country they want. They can take the, you know, clothes on their back, and that's it. We also need to discuss the Constitutional Reference Office and or resources for the Reference Office, because this is where your state legislators can actually go to, where they have the ratification debates to actually wade through how the Constitution was defined regarding this, that, or the other thing. This way, when they make a law or when they, you know, look at funding coming in, is this funding constitutional? Should we be taking it? Every time they have to engage with the federal government or they're going to make a law, the Constitutional Reference Office really needs to help them to make sure that they understand that what they're doing is either constitutional or a violation. And this is how they keep blood off of their hands. They don't have to wash their hands as long as they stay in alignment. And I've offered with a few state legislators the help necessary. And as a matter of fact, that you can go to, for I want to say it's about $3,000 to get all of the resources from the University of Wisconsin. The problem is that those resources are in hard copy. And so, anywho, nevertheless, let me move on. The next step is we need to get into standards and regulations. And almost everything you've heard here are things that we actually cover on the show. And the state legislators need to understand that they have the obligation and duty to create standards and regulations for the press. That the concept that there should be a free press is only a concept placed upon the federal government. That the state government shouldn't create a propaganda mill, but what the state government should do is create standards and regulations and laws to basically differentiate between a true journalist news organization and a propaganda mill, and creating a propaganda tax. Because bottom line, if you want to be a propaganda mill, then that means that you're doing something for a reason. You've got an agenda, and the money and the revenues that you're making should be taxed, where I believe other news agencies that are truly objective and objective and what do you want to call that? I'll just stick with the word objective. Forgive me. But the way you actually go through the process of determining, I'm going to kind of give you a good example, and we've talked about this before, is in the annual process, that just like jury duty, the state basically calls a sampling of the people, and they go through a body of people, have them go through all of the different stories and all the different headlines, you know, and kind of do the analysis. And as a matter of fact, there's no reason why, because it all can be done digitally, that the digital distilling of all of these articles, they can kind of create a value. But the last thing I want to do is I want to trust algorithms and software. But what we want to do is we want to make sure that there is a jury of peers that looks at all the different news agencies within the state and say, this is a propaganda mill, this is really good objective journalism, and awarding people based on their performance and or taxing them based on their slants. But anyway, we will be right back after these two promos. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
So before I get back into these topics, I'll give you some other good news or some alternate news. As you know, this election is basically being boiled into legal arguments instead of actually auditing, which really bothers me that the court has such dominance in our society when, you know, it should come down the first before anybody can walk into court. There should be a full audit of what has happened. And as far as I'm concerned, instead of in the year 2000, all eyes were on Florida. Well, no eyes are on Florida today because all eyes are on Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, and Arizona. Those are the six states that are being contended for and actually being fought in court over. So if you go out and you really look at the Electoral College and how the other states, other than these six, have attributed to the Electoral College, you will actually find, so here's the good news, that Trump actually has 232 Electoral College votes based on this unconstitutional Electoral College, and Biden only has 227. So based on how these six states go down the path of being settled by the Supreme Court, there's a good this isn't over, but it seems like they've already coronated Biden, and they're already going down this path of giving him the keys to the kingdom. When everybody knows, and I've said this before, Biden will not serve out his term as president. He will be replaced by communist Kamala Harris, because Kamala Harris will work with the other executives of Biden's administration per the 25th Amendment, Section 4, where they will just write letters to the Speaker of the House, which will be Pelosi, and Pelosi will remove Biden and Harris will serve out the remainder of his term. And the question is, how will the American people look and view that bait and switch? Will they be upset? Will they actually see the maniacal side of, you know, what's really going on? Or will they, you know, go, you know, hey, this is a good thing because we're going further and faster into communism. Anyway, just wanted to give you some more good news because there's good news out there. But let me get back into standards and regulations for the press. The 14th Amendment does not protect the immunities and privileges for organizations. So this is why the press and the states can actually regulate and create standards unless the state constitution declares that the press must be free. And I will tell you that you need to change that. There's no constitutional standing, and that it's time that states start holding standards for the press so that when you get a national feed, say ABS, CBS, Fox, it doesn't matter. If they're airing in your state, then they have to comply to the state standards or be fundamentally dragged into court and have to pay the fines and fees and everything else for violating these statutes, laws, standards, regulations, and so forth. This is how you can force the press into moving back towards objective journalism instead of allowing them to manipulate the people the way they've been doing for so long. Anyway, and the last topic, if there's something I'm missing, by all means, let me know and we'll add it in here. But the last thing we want to talk about is the compassionate services and churches and the role the churches played in the early day republic and why the churches need to be basically relied upon once again to take care of compassionate services. Nobody does compassionate services better than the churches, and I'll even say the community. You know, when you have, you know, community organizations and so forth, nobody does that better. And that's just because they know who you are. They can help you directly. In addition, they don't enable bad behavior. They help those who are really willing to do, you know, to better themselves and to get into the right position. Because welfare as a right is a disease. But welfare to assist somebody to become self-sufficient, to become, you know, sustainable on their own accord and everything else, that should be the objective. That should be the goal of every welfare program, whether it be employment services, education, healthcare, or what have you. We need, and I understand that there's limitations. There are definitely limitations physically for some people not to be able to play in the NBA, right? You're not tall enough or what have you. But the fact of the matter is that if you lose your job and you don't have any marketable skills, then the churches could help provide the, you know, assistance in becoming a marketable person so that you can get a job. Now, when you do things that, you know, that cause you, like steal from the, you know, the store or what have you, then obviously you're going to have a reputation problem. It's not like you have this, you know, hardship because no fault of your own. My point is that compassionate services are far better administered by church agencies. And one of the things that the 14th Amendment does not apply to with the church, with the state, is allowing states to create a symbiotic relationship with churches. Back in the original days of the Constitution, all 13 states actually used churches to administer compassionate services. That's where education was being managed, healthcare, and those types of things. That's who was actually performing those things, were the churches. And so those states were actually taxing the people and giving that to the church to allow the church to do those things. Now, today, that back in those days, it was a monopoly. It was an agreement with one particular church, the Anglican Church, the Puritan, whatever. Today, the best way to do this is to allow the states to openly compete these compassionate services and granting everybody, you know, a little bit of help to say, okay, go out there and compete. Now, here's the thing. The reason we're in this pickle is because the godless seculars, that don't go to church felt and cried, oh, it's unfair. We're not having anything because we don't have a church. So you've got to do something for us too. No, go create your church. If you want to be godless, then create your godless church and say, you know what, we're going to cover your reckless abandon. We're going to cover your immorality, and we're going to help you be as immoral and as impure as you possibly can. And there is your foundation for your church, right? Okay, so if you start actually peeling this apart, you'll realize that any church or organization that promotes those types of behaviors, it is literally going down the path of self-destruction. I mean, it goes down this downward spiral because here are people that are just wasting money and wasting the resources of the church, and there's no return. It's not like these people in most churches, when people are assisted to get back up on their feet, well, they're able to contribute and tithe and pay sacrifices or what have you, and humbly give back to the church that helped them. Well, the secular godless people, they understand that they're not out to, you know, make their lives better. They're out to destroy them. I mean, when you really put it down on paper, there was a reason why we were manipulated into going down this godless path, because it was a destructive course. It was not a course of enlightenment. And so, you know, when there's people out there that don't believe in God and they need help, then they need to create their own church so that they can help each other and, you know, start with contributions first. I don't think the states should be paying a penny if you're not getting contributions into that organization at some level, right? I mean, there have to be enough people to believe to contribute. And I'm going to tell you that the secular godless churches or organizations, whatever you want to call them, I don't think they're going to get a penny from any of these, you know, businesses or people, you know, because people will realize that that is an end or a no return on investment source. Why invest in something like that when they don't even have any morals? I mean, it's bad enough to see people in church actually skim off the income, the revenue, the donations, the tithes for themselves to get a new car, a new Cadillac, or what have you. I mean, people already see that level of corruption, but when we actually see the godless churches come together, or if they ever try to do that, I mean, it'll be so steeped with corruption. It'll just be, to me, it'll be as plain as the nose on your face. Anyway, so now that we've finished going through these topics, what we want to do is go through, and I realize I've got less than a minute left. We're going to go through tomorrow, wrapping up the week. I'm going to hit the air running. We're going to cover a lot of these stories that G. Edward Griffin has that is just, you know, sitting out there, and you're going, oh my gosh, you know, regarding what has been going on around the world in the United States that you're not being told anything about. So anyway, with that, again, let me repeat this. If there was something I missed that I think you think that would be a very good topic for me to cover in the Legislator Limit, or I should say Liberty Summits, anything that you think would be a good add-on to what we just covered, let us know, and we will add those in. And I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL
or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.